This is tape two of the Helen Spence interview. When the last tape left, we were talking about graduate school of Bob Spence at Yale. And you mentioned when the last tape ended that you were taking Professor Page's course on theoretical physics.
Well, I really shouldn't have taken math or something else, but I guess I wanted to be sure I could do it. So when I got done, Paige said, "You did almost as well as your husband," which was a high compliment. And anyhow, while we were there at Yale, some people came up from Brazil doing postgraduate work there, and they had with them a child who was about a year older than our son. And what had made it possible for me to do this was we'd exchange babysitting, and they would take care of John in the morning when I went to class, and then I would take care of their son in the afternoon. So that made it possible for me to get time off to go to the class. And then in the evening, we could leave him, and I could go over and study in Bob's office, and the people in the house would be there in case he woke while we were away. So that was a very nice and a pleasant and cheap place to live.
It sounds like Yale was quite a long ways away from Hubbardston, Michigan. Yes. When did you feel about that?
Oh, I liked Yale. We would have loved to stay there. But even if Bob had been made an offer, and he was not, they only kept on one or two of their own students. It would not have been a good thing to do, because almost none of them ever got tenure.
Mm-hmm. So then Bob came back to Michigan State, and would you like to say something about the fact that you could have stayed, he wanted you to stay for a little bit longer at Yale so that you could finish up your degree?
Yeah, well, Bob came back to Michigan State because he went down to where they were, to New York, where they were hiring new graduates, and he met the head of the department here, who remembered him as a graduate student, and made him the best offer in academic fields, and he wanted to stay there so he could choose his own research. So we decided to come back at that time. And what did you...
You said that you had half of a master's degree at Yale, and Bob wanted you to stay.
Oh, yeah, he wanted me to stay. But it was unrealistic. I'd had to stay with the baby. We'd had to support both of us. And I'd had to somehow or other arrange for time to go over and study. And it just wasn't realistic. And besides, I didn't want to. I'd rather have another baby. I was already getting on. I was about 33.
So can you explain how you did get your degree in computer science, and how you came to work in the computer science department, or how you got pursued your education and came to work in the computer science department?
Well, I'm not quite clear. I was trying to remember how I had a chance to use the Mystic. And as soon as I heard they were building one on campus, I'd been wanting to get into this ever since I'd seen that other computer. And there was a man named Wieg from the math department who was going to offer a class on how to program it. Of course, no one knew how to program it. All they had was a manual. So I went over and signed up for his class. I still had one child who was not in school, but I was able to manage for her care in order for me to go over and take the class. So I went over and took this class, which he sort of made up as he went along, until very recently I kept his notes on it, but I finally threw those out too. But they were, you know, it was a difficult thing to program.
And the Mystic was the first major computer on Michigan State campus?
It was the first computer on Michigan State. And it was designed on one from Illinois, I think. It was actually a copy of it. And I think Von Tersch was very interested in building it here. And I was very interested in learning to use it. So as soon as I heard he was giving this class, I signed up for it to come over. And you punch tape for its input. And I can remember my youngest daughter wasn't in kindergarten yet, and she used to come over with me to punch tape and instead of babysitting. I could take her along, and if no one was using all the machines, she could punch tape, which was a big treat for her.
Would you go again over how was it that your husband got the offer back at Michigan State?
Dr. Osgood liked him as a graduate student.
Okay.
He was an outstanding student. As I say, I was always looking for a smart husband.
So he has, with his undergraduate degree from Michigan State, then it was...
No, he had an undergraduate degree from Cornell.
Oh, Cornell, okay.
No,
well,
he had
a master's from Michigan State.
From Michigan
okay,
State.
All right. Thank you. I guess I was confused on that. Well, that would make sense, Cornell not being far from his home.
Well, better than that, it had some kind of a rule that it paid part of the tuition for people in the agricultural college. So he signed up for agricultural engineering
okay. And
took all the physics courses he could, but got part of his tuition paid.
Well, as an ag engineer. So did you come back, what year did you come back to Michigan State? Do you remember that?
After we were married.
After you were married, after you left Yale, do you remember when you first came back to Michigan?
Sure.
To East Lansing?
John was still a baby. He was born in 45. We came back as soon as we could. The war ended in August, and we came back that September.
Okay. So just a couple weeks?
Wait, you went to...
No, that's right. That was when we went to Yale.
Yeah.
Or when we left Yale. Well, we were there 2 years.
2 years, so... You
came back before I was born.
Yeah, we came back just before you were born.
I was born in 48.
48, okay.
But you were born in April of 48. So we must have come back in 47.
47.
Yeah.
So he started teaching then in the fall of 47?
That sounds right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you remember what had the campus changed at all in that time when you were first getting here?
During the war years, it was much different because they were teaching all these... men who were about in the army, but that was pretty well gone by then. The campus had looked sort of run down when we got back because of course they'd had difficulty getting the students, maintaining the students.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, when we first came back, we lived in the brick apartments. Yeah.
On Cherry Lane?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The first year, We had a sort of one-room apartment. And then after Elizabeth was born, we could get a one-bedroom apartment. After Elizabeth was born, then they would give us a two-bedroom apartment. And we lived there until after Janet was born.
One thing I remember was the Quonset huts. There were Quonset huts and all across from Cherry Lane that stayed there for quite a while.
Where the students lived?
The temporary
housing. Or there were some temporary faculty?
Well, they had put them up for the war as temporary housing, mm-hmm. and they kept them for quite a while until they could build more. Remember the Quonset huts and those?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we didn't live in
those. No, but just as things that were different in the campus area.
Oh, yeah,
at that
they'd built all those Quonset huts. And there were also some other little detached...
Yeah, ticky-tacky little houses.
But Bob didn't want to live in one of those. He wanted to live in the big building.
Do you remember, did the university provide those for housing for faculty, or did you have to pay monthly rent?
We had to pay for it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it was inexpensive. And there was not much housing to be had outside. And so that was one advantage. It was cheaper. And then besides that, it was within possible walking distance. And we didn't have a car. So Bob would either walk or bicycle.
Uh-huh. Did you have any other, did you develop any close friends among the faculty that you lived with, neighbors or? At that time?
Yes. We made one family that were very close friends named the Nobles, and he was also in physics. And so we knew them first when we were in the brick apartments, and we used to exchange babysitting with each other, and were also friends. So there was some kind of a rule that after you got to be an associate professor, you had to move out of those apartments. And also, I think after a certain number of years, I don't remember the rules. So we both were looking for new housing at the same time, the Nobles and the Spences. And I said, we saw an ad in the paper, and I said to Bob, "Oh, I know that house. I've walked by it. I used to push the baby carriage down that way." And I said, it's big, and I'd like it. And I think it's run down enough so maybe we can afford it. So the Nobles and us went to look at it, and they had two houses, this one on Marigold, and another one just two houses away on Marigold that was smaller. And we looked at them and we liked it and we liked the location, and so we both bought a house. But we got the big one because we had the bigger down deposit then. Deposit to make on it.
Was that the area they called the Flower Pot District?
Yeah, it was in the Flower Pot area. Yeah. It still stands over there. Yeah. I forget its number. Now they changed the numbering once. And
it was 1063, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Didn't John Hannah and Walter Adams, were they living in the Cherry Lane apartments at the same time?
Well, not John Hannah. But Walter Adams was living in the Cherry Lane apartments when we did, mm-hmm. and I knew his wife. We
Pauline?
Used to meet down in the laundry.
Pauline?
Yeah, Pauline. Uh-huh.
And they had an apartment right above.
And Fred Williams, I think, he was my mentor in the history department. I think he lived over in that subdivision.
Didn't know them, uh-huh. but I knew Pauline because we used to meet down in the laundry.
In the laundry together. after you were busy raising your family, and your husband was in the physics department. Uh huh. And was he teaching a lot of classes, or were the student expanding? Do you remember that?
He was teaching too many classes, yes, because he was really interested in research. And so it was hard to find as much time as he wanted to do research. So he solved the problem by going back in the evening. He'd come home for lunch. And then he'd come home for dinner. And he'd take a brief nap. And then he'd go back in the evening. And for me, the unfortunate part was he didn't drive. He wouldn't drive. And so I had to take him. As long as the Arnolds,
Nobles.
As long as the Nobles lived next door, Bob Noble also would go back in the evening. But after they moved, I had to take him back in the evening and wake up and get him later when he'd call.
Sounds like long hours.
I was crazy to do it.
And to describe what it was like for a housewife with four children, we had a coal-burning stove that she shoveled the coal into the stove.
No, he did that.
Well, I saw sometimes you doing it.
No, he did that.
And then
he wouldn't let me do it.
Oh.
But I was always afraid he wouldn't close it properly because once he left it open and the gas all escaped.
Oh, no.
So I'd have to wake up and change it anyway, check it anyway.
And no garage, so if it snowed, they had to get the car warming, dig out the snow, get it all done, get the kids dressed up in their snowsuits, and then get them off to work.
Well, we didn't have a garage for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have any contact with President Hanna?
No.
Okay.
See, I was nothing but an instructor. Mm-hmm. So.
Were you aware of your husband's contact with Dr. Hanna? Did he have any work with him directly?
Uh-huh. Well, I shouldn't say. I don't really know. Off and on, Bob was head of the physics department. He never wanted to be head, but every now and then he'd fill in. But I don't think he did with Hanna. I don't think more than with the dean.
I see. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the dean's name? We could check it if you. Uh huh. Okay.
And I'm thinking it might have been Carlton, but I'm not sure.
Who was
Carlton? Is it that possible? Because there was a
Culpepper?
Carlton. But maybe I'm mistaken.
I just can't remember now.
Mm-hmm.
I never had the contact he did.
Mm-hmm.
While Bob was head of the physics department, several famous physicists passed through, and you might want to mention. When they were building that second physics department, he wrote Einstein a letter and got permission to use his image on the building. And Einstein wrote back, but that letter disappeared, not through my family, but disappeared from the files.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone named Dame Catherine Lonsdale came to visit from England, who was a very famous physicist at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some physicists coming back and forth through the department.
And did you meet her?
She stayed in our house.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Dame Lonsdale.
Yeah, she came. We had a party for her one night, didn't we?
I thought she stayed there for a couple of weeks, because I remember she brought chocolates and tulips as a going-away gift.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, she did.
Well, if you say so. I can't remember where we slept.
I never forget chocolate and tulips.
How did she sleep?
I think in the master bedroom where Ed Carr had slept for a while, in that area. But that's...
I, But I think she stayed somewhere else, and that we just entertained for her. But
well,
so you had four children by this time. Mm-hmm. Okay. How was it that you came to teach in the Department of Computer Science?
Well, it's a hard thing for me to remember, for sure. But as I say, when at the time of the Mystic, this Dr. Weed for math taught. And I think the year he left, there was no one else who knew how to program it. And I used his notes, and I gave one class when they were still using the Mystic. And then they began building other computers. And this probably takes us back to when we first used those. And you know, I forget what the different ones were. They went through different phases. And the Mystic was in, let's see.
Was that in math, or were they using it for physics, or were different departments using the computing power of the computer?
The computer here was always under the engineering college.
Okay.
They built the Mystic, and it got started there. So it was always part of the engineering department at college, as long as I can remember.
I see. And so computer science wasn't a separate department then?
Oh, no.
No, okay.
For a long time, the people who were teaching computer science had never had a class in computer science. After all, it was just starting. Mm-hmm. And who was the name of the first person they had who had ever gotten a degree in computer science? His name will come to me, but I don't remember it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were first teaching in
Paige.
Okay.
When you were first teaching in that department, were there any other women in the department, in the engineering department?
The engineering was a college.
Oh, engineering college.
College, right.
I don't know. I think there were some, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
How would I know?
How about no one was teaching computer science, but a few people.
One time they had another woman there teaching Fortran.
Oh, tell that story about how she would ask her students what she should teach.
Well, let's see, where's my little notebook? There's someone else around that, from about the time Fortran started, was very interested in the computer, and he's on campus. Have you talked with Eric Goodman?
No, I have not.
He didn't come in until that time they were beginning Fortran, because I forget her name, and she was only there 1 year. She'd come in the morning, and she was teaching a class in Fortran and another class in assembly language, and she didn't know any assembly language. And she'd come in and say, "Now, Eric, what should I talk about today?"
And he was just a student.
And he was an undergraduate.
Really?
But he knew.
Were there specialized languages on the computers that you worked on at MIT? They didn't have a separate name, or?
At MIT?
Yes.
They weren't languages. They were just calculators.
Calculators, okay.
They did what a pocket calculator does today, only a little less.
How was it that you got interested in computer languages?
Well, I wanted to learn to use the computer when they no longer used the Mystic and used other computers. Whenever possible, I came over and worked on them. And eventually, they needed people to teach. And I never much liked teaching Fortran. I liked teaching the assembly languages best, and most people didn't. And so they'd hire me even if I didn't have a degree. Mm-hmm. And my husband would say, you should get a degree. They'd pay you more money. They're underpaying you, which they certainly were. I could have earned more going back to teaching high school, but I didn't want to teach high school. And I'd say, but I don't want to go back and get a PhD. I like what I'm doing, and we don't really need the money. And by the time at my age, if I finished a PhD, there wouldn't be enough time left to make it pay.
It was interesting how you were first asked to come teach on a regular basis by the man who met you in Sears and Roebuck and...
Oh, Von Tersch.
What was that story?
I had not been teaching. Let's see, what had happened?
My parents were on sabbatical in Holland for a year.
What city in the Netherlands were you?
That was when we went with you girls.
Right.
At that time, we lived near Eindhoven.
Eindhoven.
Yeah. But we were only there part of a year, unfortunately. And then when I came back, I think I met Von Tersch down at Sears Roebuck, and he said, what are you doing now? And I said, nothing. He said, how would you like to teach Fortran? I said, I don't know any Fortran. He said, you can learn it. Go out and tell Dick Reed to hire you. So that must have been when it started here in 66, I guess.
Yeah, that would be about right.
1966. Mm-hmm. And you didn't like Fortran?
No.
No.
I liked the assembly language best. Mm-hmm. So when they had assembly language courses and some place available, I'd teach that. It went back and forth.
Were they using in 1966 IBM computers or?
No, they used CDC here for the computing department.
Okay.
I think they used IBM over at administration or something.
Mm-hmm. And that was what controlled data? Mm-hmm. The CDC, mm-hmm. the Control Data mm-hmm. Corporation. Okay.
He wants to know if you ever did any cross collaboration with other departments. You didn't help some people calculate in the physics department every once in a while?
Or the cyclotron?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. The besides. Professor Von Tersch, were there others that you worked with closely?
I didn't. You can't say I worked closely with him. Mm-hmm. Well, there's one other. Have you ever met Louis Greenberg?
I have, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked with him?
I haven't done an interview with him, but I recall,
he was still a student here. I don't even think he was a graduate student as an undergraduate, it may even go back to the Mystic.
Okay.
But it goes back a long way.
And he became the director of the computer lab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And whenever I needed help with anything, I'd ask him. And I remember one time, and that was back on a machine that was using tape. So it must have gone way back, maybe even to the Mystic, must have. And I could not find out why something didn't work. The logic was right, I was sure. So I asked him to look at it for me. And he said, yes, the logic's okay. And then he took it over and he ran it, and there was a light spot in the tape that had read as a hole. And it seems like some other time I went with him with some questions that was stupid that they couldn't find.
Interesting.
Now, he was really good.
Were there, what do you remember, were there any courses specifically that you taught that ultimately in the course of your teaching career, did they have a specialized name, or did you change over time?
I don't remember the name.
Oh.
It changed over time because, to begin with, while I liked assembly language best, they kept changing what they were using. And there were not usually names for the assembly languages, I think. And they had tried Fortran. One time, they told us that they were going to begin the next year teaching something everyone was supposed to use called A